AI is one major change agent for higher education, I think probably for the foreseeable future. But there have been many changes in the past few years that require us to both teach differently and also teach different content. And AI is just one of those examples.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kieran Kartitala, founder and CEO of End-to-End Services and the producer of the podcast Illuminate Ed. I know it's been a while since we spoke because we have been pretty busy with our AI product and a lot of the transformation here. But speaking of transformation, I have an amazing guest for you on the podcast, President Andrew Hsu. Andrew Hsu is the president of Ch College of Charleston, located in the historic and beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. President Hsu, welcome to Illuminated Podcast.
Thank you, Kieran, for having me. Honored to be here.
It's such a pleasure and honor to speak to you because I know you've been in many executive meetings with the Trump administration and probably even the Biden administration as well. And we are in the midst of transformative change with higher education, actually with the world, with the rise of AI, with the rise of technologies and transformative world that we're living in. You know, as a president of historic Charleston, where history and conservatism and also the legacy are truly foundational for this beautiful city and also for higher education, how do you negotiate between the future of technology, future of higher education, and also keeping the values and core systems in place for higher education and in a beautiful Charleston, South Carolina?
Sure. As you mentioned, this is one of the oldest towns in the country, and certainly the College of Charleston is one of the oldest universities in the U.S. In fact, we're the 13th oldest higher education institution in the U.S. And obviously, with such a long history, our tradition is very important to us, both in this city as well as to the College of Charleston, to the people here. So, what we try to do is with our strategic plan, by the way, the strategic plan that we developed 6 years ago with the help of our community is titled Tradition and Transformation. So that tells you a lot already about our approach, which is to maintain our liberal arts tradition as a historic university, as well as all the nice things about a small private college, which it used to be many, many years ago, or maybe 50 years ago. But transform it into a modern public higher education institution. So our strategic plan basically lays out what we need to do in order to transform it, but not losing our history and our tradition.
Yeah, let's talk about that balance, right? Especially, I do not pay attention to the fact that you're a private institution now moving to public. And there's also some interesting dynamics occurring with the federal government. You know, how do you negotiate the needs of your campus, the needs of technology, and also the changing environment? What kind of guides you in this process as a lot of things around you are changing?
Yeah, certainly, a lot of things are changing. The world is changing rapidly around us, not just in Washington, D.C., but in the tech world. It's a different world now if you compare to several years ago. So as higher education, we really have to make the necessary changes to to stay relevant. And what's guiding us really is, we look at our primary business, which is educating students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as long as we're focusing on the success of our students, their retention rate, their graduation rate, how well they're prepared for a future workforce, for jobs in the future that don't even exist today.
Yeah.
So those are our goals. And once we focus on that, we know what we need to do, then the rest is easier. Not I wouldn't say it's easy, but certainly with a focus, it becomes more clear as to how we need to navigate this current environment.
Sure. Yeah, and you're 100% right. Putting the student in the center of that value system and make sure that whatever we do allows us to give students better tools and better technologies and better systems is something that end-to-end our company is also focused on. And one of the, examples I always make is, when you go to Amazon, you don't have a book card to go to books. You don't have a videos card to go to videos. You don't have a, a groceries card to go to COVID groceries. You just have a single search bar. And AI is kind of preparing us for that. So as president of College of Charleston, how are you looking at AI as a transformative change to help your students learn better, help your administrators and advisors and faculty members you evolve the College of Charleston to the new frontier?
Yeah, certainly, AI is one major change agent for higher education, I think probably for the foreseeable future. But there have been many changes in the past few years that require us to both teach differently and also teach different content, and AI is just one of those examples. What we are doing now is, of course, to look at what our students need to know in order to be successful in today's world and also tomorrow's workforce. So what we're trying to do is to develop a comprehensive way of embedding AI in all that we do. And in fact, we're in the South, of course, and we're accredited by SAC COC, which is a Southern Association of Colleges and Universities. And there's a process called QEP, Quality Enhancement Program, that all the SAC COC accredited institutions have to develop. We have to develop a new one every 10 years and follow through with a 10-year effort in making the improvement. And we're required to report back to SAC COC during our reaccreditation cycle. So we just finished a one QEP in the area of sustainability, where we embedded the teaching of sustainability in all disciplines. And our next one have just been selected by our campus through, again, a faculty process where we ask faculty to propose different topics for our QEP. And the one that was chosen was intentional AI, which basically will take a holistic view of what is needed to both run a university successfully with the help of AI in all the various divisions, as well as how do we teach and what do we teach in terms of AI in the various disciplines, not just computer science need to teach AI, but today, political science,
Right.
philosophy,
Or liberal arts, poetry.
your arts, fine arts, everything that we do or our students will do in the future, will have to have some elements of AI application. So our first step, of course, is to train the trainers. We're going to work with the faculty to develop a curriculum in the various disciplines that would incorporate AI education into the courses. So that's what we're doing with AI. And of course, in the various divisions, for example, our marketing and communications department are using AI. Our advancement team is using AI, AI fundraiser, talking directly to our donors. We have an AI student support platform that's known as Clyde the Cougar, which is our mascot for this campus. And Clyde regularly talks to our chat with our students and help them solve their problems and provide counseling occasionally and certainly alert our staff if a student were to need extra help.
That
So
sounds great.
both in the back room and in the classroom, we're doing AI simultaneously.
That's amazing. I like the idea because with LightLeap AI, that's an approach that we are taking as well. We have a chatbot front end that allows us to connect to the backend systems like student information system, learning management system, and provide actionable insights to help advisors and students. Definitely want to talk to you about that. But one other thing I wanted to talk to you as president of College of Charleston, President Hsu, how are you negotiating any? Maybe I should not presume. Like, are you seeing any resistance to AI, resistance to adopting new technology, whether it infringes on faculty independence or, or just their general fear that it's going to take their job? How do you negotiate that resistance, from faculty, if you have any?
Sure. There's always resistance to anything that is new. I think that's not news to anyone. In fact, I think human by its nature are in general resistance to change. So when you talk about AI, clearly there are those naysayers that would say, oh, you can't really teach AI to the students. They're just going to use it to cheat on the exams and they won't learn anything and all their work will be done by AI. But we all know that if a student is not well versed in AI, then they're not going to be effective in the future workforce, right? So,
That's right.
what we do is again, we rely on a process that would bring in all the various opinions, whether it's for or against whatever the newest initiative that we think we might need to embark on. And with AI, it's the same thing, right? So there was long before we had the proposal on the quality enhancement program that's focused on AI, we have formed a faculty committee on AI. And that faculty committee has debated to the full extent whether it's all the pros and cons of teaching AI, not teaching AI, where to teach AI, how to teach AI, and all of that. Through a center for teaching and learning, we had a long debate on that. And I think the end result is that faculty are by and large very astute and very smart, and they see the future. They see what's coming down the pike. So in the end, I think the majority of the people that was on that committee all agreed this is something you just have to do no matter what, whether you like it or not. And
right.
I think now through this QEP or quality enhancement program, discussion program or selection process, the faculty and staff are better versed as to what is needed. And I think there's now just broad buy-in. I wouldn't say everybody is excited about
right.
it, but I would say the majority of the faculty are now seeing the need.
Yeah. And you are one of the, I'm sure your leadership with College of Charleston is one of the foundational principles of that. And that's why it's exciting to talk to you. You know, I'm an immigrant myself, and I'm not sure if you are, but, you know, knowing, I would love to hear your upbringing and also what drives you to lead the change, if you will, as you negotiate between, you know, new technologies versus old tradition, you know, current status quo versus the future that is ever shining, or, you know, online learning versus distance learning versus obviously AI powered learning. You know, what drives you as the leader of higher education in general and making these hard decisions? I would love to hear your backstory.
Sure. Like you, I'm an immigrant myself, and I'm an engineer. I don't know if your background is
I'm an engineer too.
Or
yeah,
not.
I'm def
yeah. So I think with that background, I think as engineers, we're drilled into our minds that you need to constantly improve, whether you're designing a product or
That's
making
right.
a product. There's always room to improve. And I think it's that desire to make things better that would drive me to improve the performance of an organization. And I see an organization as a system, you know, talk about systems engineering. And I think, you know, running an organization is a perfect systems engineering project.
Absolutely.
At the end goal, where you want the institution to go, and then you figure out backward what are the steps you have to take in order to achieve your goals. So, for example, since I arrived 6 years ago on this campus, we know that as a public institution and as an institution that is now at a city that used to be a tourist center and an excellent one at that, to now becoming a manufacturing center where we became the only city where airplane and cars were made. We have Boeing 787 made here in Charleston, and we have Volvo, Mercedes vans here, and so on. And so we have now become a manufacturing center as well as a high-tech center because of the number of software companies that are now being developed here in the metropolitan area. So as a public institution, we need to take on the responsibility of helping our local businesses and industry to prepare a well-educated workforce. So, and as a result of that effort, we started first a new school of health sciences, and then more recently, we started a new school of engineering, computing, and mathematics. So we for 250 years we didn't have engineering program. We used to have one single engineering faculty that taught maybe probably close to 200 years ago, taught some courses, but we really never had awarded any engineering degrees in our 250-year history. But I think maybe 2-3 years ago, we graduated our first engineering student. So we really try to look at very carefully what we're offering and what is the local, state, and national workforce need. For example, in health, we now have we used to have only public health program, and then we now have a health administration program, and then we now have a new nursing program. These are all very high demand areas, especially in South Carolina and in the Charleston metropolitan area. So that's the I guess the engineer in me that sees all these needs and then trying to improve an institution.
That's amazing. Speak of improvement, I've seen a lot of news about how institutions are struggling with enrollment. Charleston is skyrocketing, and you have under your leadership, College of Charleston has hit some big landmarks and milestones. Can you talk to me about your latest accomplishments at College of Charleston?
Sure. First of all, College of Charleston cannot grow. That's one problem we have. We're downtown Charleston, landlocked, limited space, and so we try to keep our enrollment at around 12,000 students. But what I found when I first arrived on this campus was people kept on saying, we're really a great school. We're one of the best kept secret in the nation. And I looked around and I look at our faculty credentials and so forth. Indeed, I mean, we probably are one of the best schools.
Definitely one of the most beautiful schools as well.
Academic excellence. But, we're not as well known. So we started a project that has completely revamped on how we recruit and how we advertise or market ourselves. And within 5-year period of time, we moved from having about 10 to 11,000 applicants a year, and that has been stable for probably 15 years prior to my arrival, to now. This fall's applicant pool is over 32,000 students.
That's amazing. So, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And so we're in a way, we're sort of bucking the trend. We know that nationally, there's going to be a decline in college age students, and a lot of the schools are already struggling. My hope is that if we can continue with our academic reputation and continue to develop programs that are needed by the employers and the students, then we will continue the current trend.
That's amazing. Congratulations. And I saw some news about induction into Phi Beta Kappa. Is that true?
Yes. So, this is one thing that we're very proud of. Of course, Phi Beta Kappa is the country's oldest honors society. And it's only about 10% of the 4-year higher education institutions have a chapter of Phi Beta Kappa. You have to apply and you have to qualify academically, and we went through a multi-year application process to prove our academic excellence, prove our financial soundness, and so on and so forth. And actually, there was a interview process where there was a team from Phi Beta Kappa came to our campus, interviewed me, interviewed the provost, the CFO, and so forth. And we're proud to say that we are kicking off our first the members of our first cohort this
amazing.
semester. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. I think you've shown remarkable leadership on everything you do. And I'm super grateful for the opportunity to talk to you, President Xu. As we start wrapping it up, and I know it's hard to answer this, you know, if we were to predict, if you had a crystal ball or ChatGPT or something, that will predict what will be the future of higher education 5 years, 10 years from now. I know it right now, it sounds interesting with the cancellation of Department of Education, and there's some high-level changes, but keeping all that aside, what are you seeing as the future of higher education, and how should, you know, other leaders follow your example to become more resilient to change and build the better academy for everybody?
Well, so, I think it's not news to anyone who's studied higher education that there is a so-called demographic cliff coming, and that is that the college age students or population in this country is declining, and of course, our higher education system was developed, the current system that we have was developed in the late 60s to early 70s when baby boomers grew up and they demanded more and more seats in higher education. And that's when all these fairly large, metropolitan area-based public schools were started, and actually the College of Charleston became from a very small private college became a public school and grew to its current size around 1970. But if you compare to that, the number of students has been declining, the number of seats in higher education have not. So it's just going to become more and more competitive. We are seeing an acceleration already in terms of number of smaller colleges going out of business. And I think in this higher education industry, just like many other industries, has already sort of demonstrated the big are going to get bigger, and some of the smallers will not survive. So I think for schools like ours, we really need to prove our academic excellence, prove the value of our education, and so that students would continue to trust us and parents would continue to trust us to send their students here. So that is at least the plan of the College of Charleston. We will continue to be very conservative in terms of our fiscal responsibility and continue to be conservative and not expand heavily, because I think the future is going to be for those schools that are that have proven their value, as well as are very careful in managing
their resources,
finances.
That's awesome. President Xu, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Listeners, we will post the show notes with link to contact President Xu or check out his Instagram and LinkedIn as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day. Thank you so much, President Xu.
Thank you, Kieran. Good to meet you and good to talk to you.
Everything is a service. Whether it's finding ways to help students reach their goals within higher education, sharing medical records to patients quickly and securely, informing residential customers of an impending outage, or communicating with remote satellites thousands of miles apart. All of it requires data, integration, and communication. At End2End, we provide services that make all of these possibilities realities. And we make it faster, simpler, secure, and easier. Because we believe everything is a service, and bringing everything together is how we can help you innovate and change the world.